In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. My guest is Justin Pierre, who's best known as a member of Motion City Soundtrack, but he's also part of the Awkward Pause, who released the recent coolest song in the world, It Must Be Summer. They released it as a tribute to the late Adam Schlesinger, the Grammy Award-winning songwriter and producer who passed away last year from COVID-19. He was 52. Adam wrote the song, and it was released and recorded when he was a member of Fountains of Wayne as part of their album Utopia Parkway. Let's hear some of the Awkward Pause version, and then I'll be back with Justin Pierre on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
It must be summer, 'cause the days are long, and I doubt you longer, but you're gone, gone, gone. I'd set out searching, but the cold won't start.
Hey, this is the Mighty Manfred, and my guest today for our Coolest Conversations is Justin Pierre, singer, songwriter, and guitarist, best known for being a member of Motion City Soundtrack. But what brings him to our attention today is his involvement with the Awkward Pause. They're responsible for this week's coolest song in the world, It Must Be Summer, written by the late songwriter and record producer Adam Schlesinger. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there pretty well. I'm very happy to have a chance to chat with you today. You know, for over a year now, I have typically been asking folks how they have fared over the course of the pandemic and how that's impacted their family and friends. And most of the time, thankfully, people have been spared any direct loss, but that's not the case, not the case with the Awkward Pause. Can you tell us first about your relationship with Adam Schlesinger and then why the Awkward Pause formed?
Yes. I think the first time I was aware of Adam was either through Fountains of Wayne or, and it seems simultaneous, that movie, That Thing You Do, like everyone had to know who wrote that song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like even as a, you know, slightly younger person, wanting to know that information. And so I knew his name before I ever met him. And I believe my band Motion City Soundtrack opened for Fountains of Wayne at the Double Door in Chicago really early on in our career. And we were a bit more punk rock and thrashy than that crowd was probably prepared for. So I don't know how well we did, but I do remember seeing them and thinking, oh my God, this band is so good. And then eventually we ended up working with him, and he and Eli and Jeff all worked on our third album, which is called Even If It Kills Me. They did half of that album, and then Rick Ocasek did the other half. And oh, wow. So that's where I really got to meet him. But mm-hmm. It was, you know, of all of the people involved in this song and this project, I probably knew him the least. But I did work intensely with him for a very short period of time. And I think most people who did work with him worked intensely with him because he was intense, you know, in terms of his excitement for everything in the moment. Like, oh, let's do this. Let's do that. Oh, ooh, flip this around. Okay. Never mind. You know, he was just like this very speedy, like just ideas just kept flowing out of the dude.
Yeah. And so tell us about how the, Awkward Pause formed. Well, why did you feel compelled to get together and to record?
Well, I was asked by Eli, and I was terrified of the idea of it. And then that is, I've been trying to do things that are slightly scary because it just seemed really, I just wanted to do a good job and to do it well. And it, and just the idea of it kind of terrified me, but it did make sense in that, you know, Jeff, Eli, and myself, we're all working on this project together with Adam 15 years ago, I think it would have been. And so that was also part of it. Yeah. So I was just happy that they thought of me to do the thing. And so, yeah.
Well, you mentioned Jeff, and we'll talk about Jeff Sanoff here, and also Eli Janney. And Jeff, we know through the Underground Garage, is working at Little Steven's studio there in Manhattan. And Jeff has worked with a lot of the Wicked Cool Record artists. And on this recording, I believe he's playing like a 12 string, contributing some backing vocals. Eli Janney is on the keys. And the rest of the group is rounded out by Fred Armisen on the drums and also Mark Plotty on the bass. Can you tell us about Mark?
Yeah, Mark was the one person that I wasn't familiar with at all before we started doing this. Yeah, most of us just kind of sent music back and forth because we're all in different locations.
Right.
But I do believe Mark and Jeff recorded together. That's the one thing I do know. But when I looked him up, I was kind of blown away by all of the people he had worked with. And if you listen to the bass playing on this, it's just nuts. I think, yeah, he's definitely at a different level than the rest of us. And I think I can say that with, you know, without, you know, making Jeff or Eli or anybody feel bad. But yeah, for me personally, it's like, oh man, I just don't want to be the one that like wrecks this thing.
Well, we're familiar with Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live and such. Tell me something about Eli Janney.
Well, one thing I will say about Fred is that I like, if you had told me that the drummer of Trench Mouth would go on to be this hilarious comedian, like I, you know, it was so weird because I had seen Trench Mouth several times opening for, you know, Smashing Pumpkins or Fugazi or Jawbox or somebody, but I don't remember, you know, as a teenager, it was like, I was not interested in seeing whoever was opening for the bands because I was that kind of a jerk. So I have no idea what Trench Mouth sounds like, but that is just so like weird to me, as a concept. But yeah, but Eli was is and has been a very integral part of my journey through music. We met, we played a show with Girls Against Boys, I think somewhere in Michigan at a college, maybe, my memory is a bit foggy. And we met Eli, and he was just so kind and warm, and he's just always, he seems happy. Maybe he's not, but he's just always just very warm, kind, and cool. And he just sort of said, oh, hey, yeah, if you want to do this for a living, I suggest maybe you read this book. This might help you, you know, learn a few things about the business side of the thing, and like, here's what you can do for, you know, creative stuff. He just was always giving us things to do and things to look into. And he eventually introduced us to his lawyer, Richard Grable, who then became our lawyer. And Richard Grable's worked with, like, you know, Sonic Youth and Jawbox and a bunch of cool bands that we liked growing up. And yeah, and then we recorded a couple one-off songs with Eli, and then did half of Even If It Kills Me with Eli and Adam together as the producing team. Yeah. And then it's, again, another bizarre thing. Like, he's now the band leader on Late Night with Seth Meyers when Fred's not there, which is most of the time, it seems like. And yeah, it's just bonkers to me. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, the name Awkward Pause, so I've been told that comes out of an AOL account that Adam had. Is that correct?
That's the rumor that I heard. And I believe Jeff told me that. And I got to say this too about Jeff. When we were recording that half of Even If It Kills Me, Jeff was the engineer, the main engineer on that project. And I found out a few days in that he was in the band Edsel. And I flipped out about that more than I flipped out about the fact we were working with Rick Ocasek, or more than the fact that Drew Barrymore was stopping by to work on some vocals for lyrics and whatever that, there's some movie that Adam was writing. But like, I just couldn't handle the fact that one of the guys from Edsel was working on one of my projects. And I think I don't know if he thought I was being facetious or something, but like, I was seriously, that floored me because I just really liked that band growing up.
Yeah.
Just wanted to throw that out there too.
Oh, well, I'm glad you did. I was mentioning myself, I brought up the AOL account thing and Adam having that as an awkward pause as a, his name there because I also have an AOL account and I figured it was just me and three old ladies from Pasadena that still do, but I've never had the opportunity to meet Adam, but I felt a connection there. So you guys issued as the Awkward Pause, you did a version of It Must Be Summer. I think that came out in May of this year and written by Adam Schlesinger and Chris Collingswood. Their version appears on the 1999 Fountains of Wayne album, Utopia Parkway. Why did you guys choose this particular song?
I think it was a combination of the songs that were available and the songs that everyone liked. And it was more important to me for them, for like Jeff and Eli, who were like, you know, really tight with him, to be the one selecting the song. And then I just kind of said, I think I can sing this one. I don't know if I could do a good job doing this one. How do you see, you know, we kind of had some conversations back and forth. I think this song was, it just felt like a song that I could sing. However, I did make them transposed it. Like, I don't know, maybe like a step and a half up because mm-hmm. I've got a pretty high voice.
Yeah.
That was really the only change. And then I just totally, like, I don't know why I did this, but I just took a stab at writing my own solo, which was, it's like, I don't know why I did that. And I feel kind of terrible that I did that. but because the guitar player Fountains of Wayne is ridiculously good. And I still don't know what compelled me to do that. I was just trying to do stuff to do stuff. And I think I threw in a bunch of super chunk guitar parts at the end that I think they buried and some other stuff. I don't know. I just like to know if I like to make covers that sound exactly like the songs. Cause then it's like, why not just listen to the original song? But this one, I feel like it made sense to make it, you know, more like the original song. And so they took all the weird stuff that I did and Jeff found a place for it or got rid of it. So I'm pretty happy with how it turned out.
So you mentioned sending tracks back and forth. When were you guys actually recording this? Was it over the course of last year?
Oh man. No, I think it was really just a couple of weeks. I think it was a couple of weeks before the event. I just don't have a very good sense of like when things happen, right. But I know it was this year and it was, I want to say that we finished it up a couple of weeks before the event.
Oh, what event are you talking about? What event?
But yeah, there was like a whole several hour tribute where a bunch of people recorded or played live to tape versions of songs that Adam had written. I think Courtney Love, Chris from Dashboard Confessional, and James Eha. It was just so wild, like the amount of people that were there. Like I think Ben Queller, Mickey Dolenz sent a little message. I don't know. It was really wild to see all of these people all on one, you know, it's a couple hours, I think, but it was an online event.
You know, I mentioned Chris Collingswood. Yeah, he was also in Fountains of Wayne with Adam. And when you look up It Must Be Summer, he has a co-writing credit on that. Are you familiar with Chris? Are you friends with him?
I wasn't. Like, I'm not friends with any of them. We're more like acquaintances that would like bump into each other in Belgium or somewhere on a on the festival circuit because our bands didn't necessarily fit the same thing. Like the only time we would ever really play together was during like a festival.
Right.
So I don't know, you know, I don't know any of them very well. The only one of that band that I knew at all was Adam from working with them.
Right.
So, yeah, but I do know that they wrote, you know, I believe all of them, almost all of the songs were either an Adam or Chris song or they wrote them together.
Yeah.
At least that's how I understand it.
Is there any plans to perform again as the Awkward Pause or to perform as the Awkward Pause or do any other recordings?
Yeah, I remember when we were finishing it up, Jeff and Eli and I were all talking like, oh, this was fun. And then I don't know who suggested it. I don't know if it was Jeff or myself. It was probably one of us, but we were kind of like, oh, we should do another song, or we should, like, maybe we just do a bunch of covers, or maybe we write some original tunes at some point. But we're all ridiculously busy with various projects, so I'm not sure when that would happen unless somebody comes up with an idea and sends it to somebody else. But I love the idea of a long distance, you know, sort of musical love affair where you're just having fun for the sake of itself.
Right.
That seems very refreshing to me. After, you know, scrambling over the last year to make sense of something in an industry that you can't do anything in the way that you were used to doing it.
Right. Well, I mentioned at the outset of our interview, you're a member of Motion City Soundtrack, and I believe you guys had a new single out last year, Crooked Ways. Are you working towards a new album? Is there a new full-length on the way anytime soon?
Well, our last album, I believe, came out in 2015, and then in 2016, we took a break, as we all had, three of us had young daughters, and we just kind of, I don't know, realized, oh, you know what? We don't need to be doing this all the time. We can not do this and see how that feels. And ever since then, we've all kind of gone in different directions doing different projects. And so it's a lot harder for us to get together and do things, mm-hmm. but we have been sending songs back and forth since then. But there's no, like, this weird imaginary pressure of making it, in quotes, or getting to that next level is now gone, in terms of, it's just so weird to, like, have this imaginary stress that doesn't exist for so long, and then realize, like, oh no, we can just go on tour every few years, write some songs, put them out, like, just enjoy what we have.
Right.
And we did a tour last year that ended right before, like, it ended in February of 2020, and we lucked out very much so in that everything shut down like a few weeks after that. And that was really fun. And there were a lot of people that came out and still wanted to hear what we were doing. And so that sort of, I guess, rejuvenated us in a way and got us excited. The song that came out more recently, Crooked Ways, was actually an old song that just never saw the light of day. And so it was sort of, but it's new to everyone else. And I think having put that out, it kind of did the same thing as that tour did. We were like, oh, people are still interested if we have music to, you know, I don't know. Maybe we just don't. Well, I definitely don't know what my emotional or whatever the term is, worth is. But it seems that people care more about what we're doing than I give them credit for, or that I don't know. If Tom Waits put something out, I would, you know, I'd be there in a second. But if I put something out, that's not the same thing to me. But to some kid, and I say kid, anybody who's under 40, like, to think that you are that for another person is just bonkers to me. But it is true.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
So today is the 9th, Friday the 9th, and you've also been working on some solo stuff, and I know you have a release out today. I think it's called The Price of Salt, right? That's the
correct.
It's out today.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the solo stuff you've been working on and doing.
Well, it started as a lark. Not really, but just sort of, with Motion City, I tend to simply write the vocal, like the melodies and the words and some of the guitars, or like the basic structure, power chord wise, of songs. And with Motion City, we definitely write collaboratively, and we all kind of put our spin on things. So I do not understand how bass works or how drums work. So in 2018, I put out a solo record called In the Drink, and my buddy from Motion City Soundtrack, Josh Kane, he produced it. And it was more of an attempt to see if I could write like full songs on my own, just as like a practice of sorts. And it turns out I kind of can, but both Josh and the drummer I hired, David Jarnstrom, They both were like, okay, so a human cannot physically play these drum parts that you've written via computer. But I think it's cool. Let's figure out how to do it. And so that was really fun to like make the drummers and the bass players think outside of what is, I guess, supposed to be there for songs. And then, you know, it came out on Epitaph, and it just, everything just kind of happened by chance without any intention to do anything other than to just see if I could. And so now I'm doing it again, but this was supposed to be a full length, and now it has become a couple of EPs. And so the idea was to do a bunch of sessions. I mentioned Tom Waits earlier, but he's sort of like the guy I go to. I have no idea how he works or what he does, but I love, like, he'll hire this person over here to play guitar or this person over there to play bass on this song. And on this song, he's got this person playing bass. And that to me was like, I want to try that. And so with these EPs, the first one, I put a band together in LA and I recorded with Brett Gurwitz producing. And then this, The Price of Salt, I did here in Minnesota during lockdown. And my friend Thomas Rabin, who he's a mad scientist, and we actually tried recording live, where the bass player and myself were parked in our own cars outside of the studio, running cable into the studio where the drummer was recording, and then we had a Zoom call going with a guitar player in Ohio, droning in the key of the songs because it was off. So we'd have to just shift it once we recorded it.
Let me interrupt here for a second, because I don't want to be past that and not having heard it correctly. So you guys were in automobiles playing your parts, right?
Trying to. Some of it we used.
So let me ask you, were you in the front or the back seat?
I was in the front seat because I needed to. This is the other part, which I don't know. We used the car stereo somehow as a... as our monitors. So he was able to send, somebody was able to send the signal to our car stereos in real time. And then that's what we used as the monitor. So I had to keep turning him up and down. You know, I don't know. It was really fun. It kind of worked.
You're sitting out in these cars and take us back. So what was happening now? There was a guy that you were sending someone else was remote, and what happened?
Yeah. So we had the drummer in the studio. The two of us were in our own cars with our instrument cables going through the window and down underneath the door going into the studio. We had the monitors coming through the speakers in our cars. And then we had a guy on Zoom, a guy by the name of Joe Camerlengo, who is one of my favorite musicians of all time. And he, his main band is called Van Dale. But he's basically the Robert Pollard of, I want to say, Columbus, Ohio. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. But he's much younger, and he is just a mad genius. So all of the weird, crazy noises you hear on this EP are from Joe, and he sent us no less than 20 tracks. But on the day, he was trying to drone in the key of the songs because there was a lag and there was a delay. But it was really hard for Tommy and the engineer Jacob Carlson to hear what was going on, because it was just a mess. So at a certain point, Joe just had to bow out, and I don't know if we used any of those tracks, but he did send us a ton of stuff that Tommy had to sort through, and it was very different than the first EP. Was four guys in a room playing live. This EP was people sending things back and forth, things being edited together that didn't make sense going together. Just, it was like a collage style thing. And I just found some intuitive beauty in the fact that, oh, this is fun to make different sounding things. Like I write the kind of songs I write, but it's really fun to do them in a different way each time. And I think moving forward, I want to keep doing this, but changing up how it's done.
Well, we want to go out with a track off of The Price of Salt, Firehawk. So can you give us some insight as to as that particular song? I mean, this is another one that was recorded the way you were just describing.
Yes. I don't know if it's from being cooped up too long that I'm starting to see these like connecting the dots so to speak, but I was working on a project with my friend Josh Kane, who is in Motion City Soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And he's got like this Twitch account called It's Chewdy, and it's like ITSCHEWDY, and he plays video games and hangs out and talks to people. I don't really understand it because it's not my thing. Yeah. But we would go on there during our lunch breaks and eat salad. We would have these conversations with people who would ask us questions, and we would just tell them stories and stuff. And I posted a picture of us in Amsterdam from like 10 years ago. And the picture that I posted was from the same day where I had the initial idea for this song. Just, it was humming in my head. Huh. And then I recorded it as a voice memo, because I tend to just hum things into voice memos because otherwise I'll forget them. Right. And so I've been working on this song for 10 years off and on. And then it just kind of all came together, you know, during this project. So I don't know. There's something serendipitous about all of this happening. At least that's what I'm thinking about right now. But in terms of like the content, I don't want to talk too much about it just because I like to let people do whatever they want to. But my daughter is 6, and she says things like, "I don't have to listen to you. I'm an independent woman." And she says like, "You're the patriarchy." And it's awesome. And I do not... like, I love it, but I am in for it as she gets older. But I think I'd much rather have somebody who fights against the system than somebody who cowers underneath the weight of it. So she was a bit of an inspiration.
Yes. Well, I have to tell you, my daughter is 19, and well on that path. Well, man, Justin, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Well, let's give a listen now to Firehawk. It's Justin Pierre off The Price of Salt in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Hail to the thieves and wasted opportunities. Silence is death. Misdirection is real. If I don't know what I know now, not that that would change a thing. I'd rather be where, I'd rather be nowhere than here.
That was Firehawk from Justin Pierre, and off his solo EP, The Price of Salt, out now on Epitaph Records. Thanks again to Justin for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And be sure and join me next time around when I'll be chatting with Rob Cloris, the keyboard player in Jesse Malin's band, whose career also includes performing and recording with the likes of Alejandro Escovedo, Tom Jones, the Black Crowes, and also our very own Little Steven. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.